Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 1st of February, recording at 5:40 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, although I make it somewhat shorter, mercifully, you may feel, than usual. And one of the reasons for that is because I had a longish audio yesterday. But first, a quick look at the highlights that we've seen so far this week. Some markets, many markets, had been quiet for much of the week, a little pause in the overall momentum. Exceptions, though, were Japan and China and Vietnam, which are my three favorite Asian markets for this year, and quite possibly beyond. Now, today we had also a surge of renewed activity here in markets. This was helped by the good employment figures that came out of the United States. And so as I speak, and I'm speaking several hours before the actual close, today, but the U.S. market's up about 1% overall, and that's pushed the the S&P rather is currently trading at 1512 and change. European markets are generally steadier as well. Good day in FTSE and CAC, up over 1%. Each IBEX, that's Spain and Italy, however, are down a bit today. Now, elsewhere in the Americas, you've got a strong performance by Mexico. Brazil's up nearly 1%, and Canada also at least 0.75 percentage point to the upside. Long-dated government bond prices, which had been quietly steady at the earlier in the week, they're seeing a little bit of softness here right now against background of this global stock market rally. In terms of currencies, no big drama. And here the U.S. dollar is a little weaker. The most interesting one by far, is the Japanese yen. That's now at 92.5 against the U.S. dollar, 92.5 yen. So the yen has continued weaker here, and I think it's encouraged by some comments on Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's choices for replacing various Bank of Japan officials, which is something some of us have long looked forward to, and no one more than some of those beleaguered Japanese exporters. Now, elsewhere, now Sterling's actually a little bit soft in here, and I think that's a trend that we've seen in recent weeks, and one that may continue overall. Now, looking at the commodity markets, general firmness in here. One of the worrying ones is that the Brent crude oil has been really quite strong overall, and it's moved up to test the highs that we had seen during the second half of last year. Now, we know there's some unease in the in the Middle East for sure, and that can keep people a little anxious. We also know that the increased confidence that we've seen generally in not only in world stock markets, but also that also leads through to increased confidence in what's going to happen in terms of overall economic prospects, that's put some upward pressure on oil prices. But that Brent, which is of course at a significant premium over the WTI, and that really ought to shake up some of the complacency or slowness that we've seen in Asia, really, in terms of getting their acts together in terms of shale oil and gas production. One despairs over Europe's passivity against the background of strong energy prices and the over-intensification in terms of renewables, which are not yet all that efficient and they're very expensive and have to be heavily subsidized, and costs are going up generally because they certainly won't all be subsidized. And that's a development that I expect over the next 10 years or more, the development of these shale oil and gas properties around the world. But you know, sometimes the wheels change very, very slowly here overall, but there's a need to become engaged in this. And meanwhile, though, the U.S., well, some of corporate America will be laughing because this is giving the U.S. a competitive advantage, and this is all down to the private sector, as you know, not the Obama administration. Okay, what else is going on here in the commodity markets overall? Generally, a firm tone here today. And those grains and beans are mostly, well, they fluctuate a little bit. They're mostly a little bit steadier, but they've turned to mixed right now. But they have seen a reasonable rally here in the last few weeks. And one of the reasons for that has been, I guess, a little bit more optimism about the global economy, but also some concerns over drought conditions, which would affect wheat in particular, in the U.S. would affect the red wheat, and certainly the U.S. needs some rain, particularly in the far western regions of the grain belt. Now, industrial metals are also firmer in here today, and they're getting a boost from China's strong stock market performance, which has continued in here today. And I think Asia is going to do very well in 2013, and that if China is one of the leaders in that trend, and I suspect that it has been really since the beginning of December, albeit coming off a very low point, having been a serial underperformer. But I've said on a number of occasions that it will go from serial underperformer to serial outperformer in here, and that will be good for industrial metals. It will help all the ASEAN stock markets, which had been pretty strong overall anyway, and it will help various economies around the world, not least Australia, as I've mentioned before. Now, let's look also at the precious metals in here today. We've had some fairly volatile action getting these sort of 10-second moves of $10 to $15 or more in the gold price, but right now we've got gold bullion sitting at 1672, so that's up about $8.50 here today. It has been higher. If I look at the range on the day, it's been 1682.25 to 1660 and a half. Now, so we've got a lot of disagreement and a struggle going on in the gold market. I've got some comments that I'm posting here today that I think are interesting on gold, but have a look at of that if you're interested, and other interesting things I think also in comment of the day here today. But the precious metals have been range bound for quite a long time. Now, not all of them are range bound here today. We've had palladium, as you know, has broken up out of that long range. That's a positive move for the rest of the sector. And my feeling is that that will be followed by a similar move in platinum. Now, investors who are interested in those metals are taking heart because they're not only precious metals, but they're also key industrial metals. And they're also thinking about the global car industry, which has received a lot of favorable publicity recently. And they know that palladium and platinum have major uses in the in the catalytic converter sector to keep down pollution. And so they've been in favor overall. But we've got palladium in here today at 1692. And if we get a decisive break above 1700, and I think we will, then that will be breaking up out of its long, long sideways trading range following palladium. And there are also some concerns about supplies for those two. You know, the stories always match the direction of the moves. It's a little bit of a chicken and egg situation in terms of which came first. But silver here today, it has bounced around, but it's currently just below the $32 level, so that's a reasonable gain today. And I've already mentioned the gold price being above 1672. Now, the point is that if platinum and palladium, or if platinum follows palladium higher up out of this range, that will be a favorable indicator for silver and gold, which are lagging here right now. And the main reason they're lagging is that people are saying, well, things are actually getting better. Therefore, if you were holding these as a hedge against disaster, that's less necessary. But people hold gold and silver for all sorts of reasons, not least that they're precious metals, monetary metals. And they have a long history of holding their wealth relative to paper currencies. But there are a variety of different reasons why people hold the precious metals. And I would take additional encouragement on seeing platinum break upwards as I suspect over the next few weeks, that gold and silver won't be too far behind. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. For that to happen, we need to see gold move decisively above the 1700 level first. That will cause some doubts among the people who have stepped aside or are actually short bullion. And a number of people are. The bigger level, though, for gold is the next $100 to move above the 1800 level. Now, there's plenty of disagreement in terms of what's going to happen with gold overall. But my feeling is that if the primary trend, the primary upward trend that we've seen for gold, if that's going to remain consistent, and it has so far, this lengthy pause, you can see that happening earlier on in the cycles, particularly if you look at a logarithmic chart, and I posted another one of those today. If that consistency is going to continue, and consistency, I should say, in any trend is very important because it shows that nothing's gone wrong in terms of the primary drivers of that trend. And the long-term bulls will be happy to remain with it, and further people will be attracted to that trend over time and help to fuel it further. But, and I think this is an important but, if we don't see gold break back above the $1,800 level before the end of June, then we're going to have a quite clear inconsistency. That doesn't mean that gold would fall all the way back down necessarily, but it would encourage the bears and it would discourage the bulls, and the yellow metal would be more vulnerable than it has been over the last decade. And I'm not arbitrarily choosing that date, and it may well come sooner if we get that move to the upside, as I suspect. But seasonally, this is a favorable period for precious metals, and I would not like to see gold and silver lose its overall consistency characteristics. So again, that's the data I have in mind. If we haven't seen gold move back above the 1800 level by, say, the end of June of this year, and with silver getting a comparable move, then I will feel that we can't have the same degree of an assurance about which way this market's going to move that we've had for the last many years. Now, what else to talk about? What about these currencies overall? There's been a bit of talk about, of course, competitive devaluations, and understandably so. Some criticism of the Japanese for finally allowing their yen, or encouraging their yen to actually weaken. Those are generally self-serving, since the yen had been ludicrously strong as far as Fuller money has been concerned for the last couple of decades in here, and that's absolutely hammered Japan's export industry, as you know, and that has had an insidious effect on the overall economy, undermining morale generally. The general deflationary environment overall was a disincentive to reinvest by corporates, and it was a disincentive for consumers to be spending their cash. It's been a negative circle for Japan for quite some time, as we all know. Shinzo Abe is a breath of fresh air in his reincarnation, determined to weaken the yen and to revive the Japanese economy. And the initial evidence from the markets endorses his proposals, certainly. And I think this is very, very important. I've mentioned this on a number of occasions, but it's so important I'm going to keep on mentioning it. And hopefully I'll also mention it if we see some signs of a pause in the recovery here, which of course we will. But I don't think we're likely to see a major reversal. My hunch is, but I'll be guided by the charts all the way, but my hunch is that we're going to see a major move to the upside in Japan, not only in this year, but also next year. I've already said that about China. That's a best, really a good bet, going from serial underperformer to serial outperformer. And I think also within Asia that Vietnam will do the same. That's a market with a lot of potential, but investors completely lost confidence. There are the usual corruption scandals that we get in all economies, but more often than not, or the majority of them, the more persistent ones, often in the developing economies, and Vietnam is very much one of the more early stage developing economies. And so we had that big devaluation of the Vietnamese dong, and that hurt all foreign investors. And though the currency was pegged against, repegged against the US dollar over 2 years ago, and it's held steady in here, and it just looks like an extended base formation pattern, and the market's cheap with a decent yield. So when you've got a single figure multiple, and I think it's at about 8, 8.5, and you've got a good dividend yield, I think it's at least 3.5, that's an attractive candidate. So those are my three favorites here for the rest of the year. Now, I have mentioned that markets were overextended, and that they, as everybody can see, and as everybody has commented, and I think this is going to spill over in this month, February, and that we will see a reaction in consolidation. However, I don't think that's going to be another one of those terrifying moves to the downside. And reasons for that is, I think, confidence generally in the global economy and the stock markets has improved. We no longer hear the crisis word when Europe is mentioned. China and Japan were major concerns last year. They're relative strength leaders here right now. And also, I think there's been a great deal of pessimism about the US economy, and those concerns have been irritated or rubbed by the fiscal cliff nonsense. And also, I think a good many financial types would have preferred the economic policies, if not the social policies, of the Republican Party, which they obviously haven't got. But weigh it all up, and those problems are temporary, if you can accept that 4 years are temporary, but they're temporary relative to what is a hugely significant advantage that the US actually has, and that's its energy advantage. And I think it's going to have that for at least the next few years. The variable in this is how quickly does the rest of the world get its act together and produce its own shale energy to make their economies more effective. Shale oil and gas, that is. And I think they will do that, but for some countries, it will take a good many more years. So the US has this big competitive advantage overall, and I think that's the most important factor. Now, they're going back to stock markets, and I'm going into the last lap of this audio, and I would say that again, stock markets are susceptible to reactions and consolidations. I don't think, though, that that's a major incentive to sell, because not all will pull back. Will China, Vietnam, and Japan pull back? Well, we'll see, but I would be surprised if they pulled back very much. And I think that the pullback will be more of a buying opportunity rather than a warning to get out because a major reaction was occurring. The fact that so many people are still extremely cautious, if not actually quite bearish, suggests that there's a whole lot of money that could potentially be directed towards stock markets, and that has not actually happened yet. And therefore, I think it's an interesting overall environment this year. So I would view a pullback here as a buying opportunity. And I'll repeat my favorite markets very quickly for this year. It would be Japan, China, and Vietnam in Asia. And then I'm going to go all the way over to Australia. Well, all the way over from where? From here, where I'm sitting, to Australia, which would be the prime beneficiary of China's recovery, and also Japan's recovery. And Australia has a habit of being an extremely good bull market performer when the confidence is running high in that country. So those would be my top four choices for stock markets for 2013. And on that note, all the best to all of you. Have a terrific weekend.